the college football playoff expands in 2024, and I'm sure Matt Rhule will have Nebraska among the 12 teams by that time. Hello, everybody. I am Sam McEwen, along with Tom Chattel, Dirk Chatelain, the heavy hitters. Is that what we're calling ourselves? I don't even remember. The heavyweights, the heavy hitters.
Well,
I'm a heavyweight.
We're all heavyweights.
Dirk's a lightweight over here. He's in Bud Crawford's class of
fighting. He's a heavyweight in his own right, but yeah.
So the heavy hitters here, a couple days after Nebraska's hired Matt Rhule as its new permanent head coach. And quite a day on Monday. And we're going to talk a lot about Matt Rhule. And we may rewind the clock a little bit to last week and talk a little bit about why I didn't think maybe it would be Matt Rhule. It might be Luke Fickell, the guy's a coach at Wisconsin. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about the two columns that you guys wrote. Well, Tom, you wrote two. One was about Trev and how this is kind of his Nebraska now. The other was really interesting, was that compare and contrast to Fickell and Rhule. And Dirk, you wrote a really interesting column. You must know the guy that you started the column with.
I don't.
How did you find that person? So, you know, about whether Monday was more of the preacher or the politician. And incidentally, I think there's a little bit of both there with Matt Rhule. But we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll go into the nuts and the bolts of what Rhule has to do over the next 3 weeks as it relates to staff hiring. They announced 5 plus the strength coach today. Recruiting, Malachi Coleman decommitted today, probably in response to Mickey Joseph being arrested, which we'll talk about very briefly, and just, you know, transfer portal and all that jazz. I'll get into the nuts and bolts, and then maybe at the end we talk a little volleyball and a little men's basketball. So we hope you're with us for the next hour. I want to remind everybody to subscribe to the Omaha World Herald. You can do that at www.omaha.com/subscribe. It is 26 weeks for $1. That means if you were to subscribe today, which is what day is it? December 1st. If you were to subscribe today, we would take you all the way deep into the spring. I mean, we'd get all the way into late May and all that stuff where we'd already know if Creighton made the Final Four. We'd already know what Nebraska did in the spring game. So this is the time to subscribe because there is going to be a ton of news at the Omaha World Herald over the next 6 months in sports, but in other places too. So subscribe. Okay, Matt Rhule. He was, on Monday, the head coach. He's getting paid a lot of money. Like, a lot of money. And that's part of the story, too. But your initial impressions of Monday, Matt Rhule, head coach, Nebraska.
Well, the first thing I heard him talk about, my ears perked up because I covered the 83 kickoff classic, but he dives right into the kickoff classic. And off to the side, I see Mark Trainowitz, who doesn't look anything like Mark Trainowitz, 83, 84, the great center, who, and Harry Grimminger, who played guard.
Right there, yeah.
And they're sitting next to each other, and they're watching the press, and all of a sudden I see their heads kind of bob up like they're, well, he's talking about us. First thing he did was he referenced Nebraska history. Then he went into the 94 year, and he just went from there. And it was quite a speech and quite a talk. He hit all the right talking points. I felt like he was speaking the language. And you could say, well, it's just a talk, and we'll see if he means it and this and that. But he sounded more Nebraskan and more Husker to me than – any of the last 4 coaches put together.
Even more than Scott.
Yeah, well, Scott talked about what he was going to do and how he was going to save it and how the Big Ten was going to have to react to his scheme. And you know, for a guy who was Nebraskan, he didn't come off like, come on, this was different. Mm. But the reason I say it was more Nebraska because he talked about development and physical play and all the things that made Nebraska what they were.
Yeah.
All the things.
He sounded like an East Coast version of Trev Alberts.
Well,
that's funny you say that because I just wrote down Trev Alberts' long lost brother. Okay. They are. I mean, this guy, Trev joked about it. I joked about it with Trev off to the side. I was like, You know, I listened to speeches from Matt Rhule 2-3 years ago, and it felt like he was talking or interviewing with Trev Alberts. Like, it felt like he was speaking specifically to Trev Alberts. And right. Trev joked about it, too. I mean, it is the most obvious thing in the world why Trev would be attracted to this guy. Because he checks every box that Trev Alberts wants. And frankly, he checks almost every box that I would want in a head coach. Including that critical Power 5 experience that I think Nebraska really needed. Mm-hmm. He's extraordinarily good at messaging, at speaking. And again, not to restate what I wrote on Tuesday, but Nebraska needs that style of leader right now. They need someone who can take the message from coast to coast and say, this is why Nebraska still matters. I don't think Mike Riley was very good at that. Scott Frost wasn't very good at that. Bo Pelini wasn't very good at that. Bill Callahan, Franks. Nobody's done it. Matt Rhule can go coast to coast and say, this is why Nebraska still matters. And I think that is a tremendously important asset to have right now. I don't know if he can coach. I think he can coach. I don't know if that for sure. I have concerns about, he talks a lot, Sam. And when you're not doing well and you talk a lot, people get sick of that. People get sick of messaging when it's not going well. People get sick of slogans and platitudes and catchphrases and what's next and all this stuff. 10 tips to a healthy, happy football program. All the stuff that Rhule does. But for the next 9 months, I think people are going to mostly love this guy.
I think that's a really good point, that Nebraskans tend to be kind of understated generally. But underneath that is somebody. Nebraskans are people who are very prideful, and they want someone in that role who is going to kind of stand up for,
make the case, man.
Yeah, and Rhule will do that. There's no question about that. A couple things that jumped out to me, and then we're going to rewind it back a week, and we're going to talk about part of how he ended up here. A couple things that jumped out to me. I like the answer that he gave about the Big Ten. I appreciated that he mentioned the quarterback. I do think, it, obviously, line play is enormously important, but I think the quarterback piece is enormously important, too. You got to get that position right, and I think he gave a sense of wanting to get that position right, which I appreciated. I appreciated that he said any decision made in the next week isn't going to be the determining factor of whether Nebraska football is good or bad. I think that's I appreciate that. They're not going to panic. We'll see if they sign a bunch of guys. I don't think they should. But maybe they will. And by a bunch of guys, I mean out of high school. A bunch of guys they don't really know or whatever. That stood out to me. And then the other thing that stood out to me is that there was a little bit of incongruency between he and Trev as to when he thought the deal was done. And then I listened to a subsequent podcast he had yesterday. I think it was called The Program, or I don't know. He did a lot of podcasts. But he said that he didn't think the deal was actually done until Saturday morning. And so Trev said Thanksgiving morning. And then when Rhule was in the breakout, he's like, well, I thought it wasn't until Friday. But then on the podcast, he said Saturday. And I think there were a lot of hoops to jump through here and a lot of hurdles to clear. And I think one of the reasons that I rewind back, and remember when we were sitting here in the podcast last week, first of all, I argued against whether or not he had the kind of resume that would be a $10 million coach. I think we talked about that. Right. And your response was you have to pay for the guy that you want. I had a sense that it was around that number. It wasn't as much as it turns out. It was like $9.25 million. I do think Nebraska did okay in its AV over the first 4 years, which is $8 million. It's not $9.25. But one, I knew that it was going to cost a lot of money to get Matt Rhule. Two, I wondered if Nebraska, knowing that Matt Rhule wasn't going anywhere, he wasn't taking any other job. I really don't think he was. Whether they were going to negotiate, quite frankly, with Luke Fickell or Chris Kleiman, but more Fickell, to see whether Fickell was interested in coming, and if so, what he would take. Now, we know now he went to Wisconsin, and his AV there is $7.8 million. He isn't coming cheap to Wisconsin, but he isn't going to be $9.25 million. So there was that part that I think was notable. But at the end of the day, after we talked to Trev for a while, you talked to Trev, I talked to Trev, it became clear to me that Trev Alberts was willing to just about do anything short of going to a 10-year contract, which they which Trace Armstrong initially suggested and Trev said no to. Short of going to a 10-year contract, Trev was willing to pay just about anything to get this guy. And this is a lot of money. Like, this is not, I know we don't, it's not our money. And I know we want to talk about how we got to pay for whatever, and I get it. But this is a lot of money for a guy that has done a good job, to be clear, at Temple and Baylor. And simultaneously, this is the thing that I wonder about a little bit more, is if he's really good at Nebraska, like really good. Let's say he does what he did at Baylor. Whether he stay?
Probably not. Probably not. But you know what? You need somebody to get this thing back on track. And you deal with that problem when it happens. I mean, I think Chattel has said this over the years about basketball. Like, it's if the guy leaves, you go find the next guy, right? Like, it's just part of the business. And what Nebraska sorely needs right now is someone who's just going to get it back on track, right? And I think Rule's the guy to do that. We can talk about his resume, what he did at Temple, Baylor, all that. We can even talk about Carolina. But I think to really understand it, you got to know, you know, you just got to recognize that and emphasize that synergy between athletic director and coach. And they look like two peas in a pod. I mean, they just do. And I think that's why I truly believe he was Trev Alward's top choice. That's why I think Rule's making as much money as he is, because Trev recognized in the interview process that Matt Rule and he were absolutely step for step in what is important and how to make it happen. They both have that professional polish. They're both really good at communication and messaging, and they both love physical football. And you put those things together, and I think Trev was absolutely gonna rack his brain to make this thing happen.
You know, if somebody leaves early, that means, I mean, that to me, that's a good thing. That means they did their job. They did what they had an impact, a positive impact. They won, and they're attracted to somebody else. Or, you know, interestingly, Nebraska football has never had a coach leave. Now, maybe it was Jumbo Steam back in the 20s or something, but since Devaney, nobody's ever left. They've all stayed. So I think that's why Oklahoma fans were so mad at Lincoln Riley, because nobody ever left before. So you don't leave this job. So,
and you know what, Tom? It's also interesting. I mean, let's go back. You know, Bo flirted with Miami and Penn State, and, you know, I mean, he was always kind of...
He wanted to leave.
He had a wandering eye.
He wanted to leave.
Nebraska might have been better off had he left.
Well,
you know. In 2011 or 2012, but like, you just need somebody to put this thing back together, well, and then it's you know, it's the job of the guy after that to take it to the next level.
That's, you know, absolutely. I think that, well, I'd like to. I couldn't get close to Rule the other day, so I didn't try.
Yeah, but you spent a half an hour with Trev Alberts.
I'll see him with spring football, maybe.
Oh, I think it's going to be. I don't think it's always going to be easy to get close to Rule.
Well, that's okay. I'll put in the work. But I want to ask him, okay, why did you leave Baylor? Okay, the Carolina owner targeted him and came after him.
Yeah.
He was a hot guy at Baylor.
Yeah, he was.
Well, you know, didn't you want to stay and, you know, enjoy the fruits of your labor? You know, Aranda got the Big 12 ring, not you, but with your players. I'd like to find out why. Well, I'd like to talk more about the NFL. Now, this is we didn't talk much about that Monday, but he's a developmental guy. Right, he likes taking young guys, three stars, these FCS guys, making them better. Well, that's a bad fit in the NFL.
Yes, it is.
In the NFL, everybody's already developed. They're not there to listen to you coach them up necessarily. They're there to make money and win. And
that's right.
That's their living.
Yeah.
That's their job.
Mm-hmm.
So, did he find out he's a bad fit there? And is he back for good? That could benefit Nebraska if he found out, here's who I am, here's my deal, here's my calling. That could really benefit Nebraska if he's got a second wind as this developer.
Yeah.
So, the other thing about money, I don't pay attention to money. It's funny. I went to Creighton, the basketball practice the other day, and I won't say who it was, but They're always asking about football. They're always asking about Frost on Nebraska. It's interesting.
Well, it's Creighton's football program.
It's but they're
What other program are they going to root for? Iowa, Notre Dame, who?
I mean the coaches because they're
I get it.
They're
yeah.
coaches.
Yeah.
But one of the coaches said, you know, how long ago was Frost hired? I said 5 years ago. He goes, well, the price doubled in 5 years, didn't it? I said, yeah, you're right. But that's where college football is going. The price is it doubled
for Matt Rhule.
Because that's where this thing is going.
Sure.
And it's going to keep going. And the Big Ten is probably going to lead the way. And the SEC, because they got the money to burn. So this is what we saw with, I mean, Wisconsin people, are they weirding out about paying Fickell $7 million? $7.5 million? That's a lot of cheese. That's not Wisconsin's deal.
That's true.
So, but that's the future. So I don't worry about it. People will. You know what it means to me is that, and by the way, a lot more than $72 million. It was probably whatever they had to pay the Carolina guy to go away. And
well, that's embedded. That's embedded within the salary.
Is it? It's yeah. not extra. I thought they were paying extra. Okay.
They get a dollar for dollar repay on the Panthers salary, and the challenge is, so the Panthers fired Matt Rhule. They owed him all of that money. They guaranteed the contract.
Right.
The guy that owns the team is a hedge fund manager. Okay. He's a billionaire, so he has the money, but whatever. The Panthers owed him the money. Simultaneously, any job he took would offset what the Panthers owed him. Usually when that happens, just like Nebraska did with Fred Hoiberg, you'll recall the Bulls were on the hook for some of the money. And remember, when the Bulls were done paying Fred, what happened? He got a stay bonus. Yeah. So the Bulls were on the hook for one more year. His salary was low. Then it went up. In the case of Carolina, I think there was a concern that the owner, being a hedge fund manager, I don't know, was going to go, no, I'm not paying it. You're coaching under your market value. You're lowballing me, so I'm going to not pay you the money. And so I think there was a concern that, well, look, if we go with a low salary for Rhule while he's still under the Carolina Panthers buyout, and then that guy doesn't pay it, then Matt Rhule's making a lot less than his market value.
Well,
so I think the negotiations that occurred over many, many weeks were related to making sure that he wasn't left unwhole in terms of his contract money. Now, here's where I pause. And I say this not understanding what I would respond in that moment when that happened. But Okay. You want to make sure you're whole. You don't want to get in a contract fight with this Panthers guy. I have no idea how the Panthers owner would win that. I have no clue how. I can't imagine how. But you don't want to get in that. So the guy doesn't pay you. If you want to coach, if you really want to be somewhere, then you're there. And you don't get hung up three or four or five different times on whether or not you're going to be made whole. In this case, that happened several times. And so the one thing that I think about is, okay, this guy kind of had to be talked into coaching this year because I think he was going to kind of take a year off. He was going to do the TV thing, and then he was going to come back. He was going to take a year off. He had to be talked into doing it. Do you feel really good about him, you know, being invested? Now, I think he is, and the reason I feel good about it is because I think that guy is so internally competitive that he could not bear to not work 110%. Remember that quote you used to have, Dirk, about how you thought Scott Frost was going to he was going to kill himself working on this job?
I never wrote it. I said it verbally a lot. I watched him those first couple weeks, and I said, he's either going to win or he's going to kill himself trying. And I've never been wrong. I've never been more wrong about something in my 20 years of sports journalism. Like,
this time you're not wrong.
I thought Scott was so motivated. You could just look, you know, see it in his eyes that he was going to will it. He was going to will Nebraska to win. And when he didn't, I compare it to fight or flight. He just he got scared and he bailed. Emotionally, he bailed. He detached. He said, I can't do it. And he went and hid. And that's why I, you know.
That won't happen.
I'm reluctant to say the same about Rule.
No, I'm not. It won't happen. He may not win, but it won't be for lack of effort. And I think I've listened to a couple of his podcasts just recently this last week, people talking about the Carolina Panthers. And his level of burning over that situation is real high. Because I think he thinks there was this guy that, you know, that does this NFL podcast. And he goes, yeah, he goes, you know, the Panthers could still win the NFC South. And Rule's response is, yeah, they can. And he goes, and I don't want to make, you know, I want to make sure that everybody,
took credit for it.
He was like, but, you know, I was part of, and the burning that he has for the way that thing turned out.
Yep.
And he got, let's be clear. I'm not trying to be a Pollyanna. He got screwed in Carolina. They never had a quarterback. They told him he had 4 years. They gave him 2.5. Christian McCaffrey was hurt all the time. He was injured constantly. Carolina never had a chance. And so, like, and he was talking about, well, we built the number two defense in the league, and we did this and this. And he's not wrong about that. I think his level of passion to prove a lot of people wrong is so high that Nebraska got somebody who's highly motivated. I do have a question of when once he pulls it off, whether he wants to stay.
Well, not only that, Sam, but I just am not sure that a guy with that personality and communication style, I don't know if it ages well. Like, it's super fun and energetic for 3 or 4 years. And when you get to year 6 or 7 and you plateau a little bit, or God forbid you recede a little bit, like, I think it might wear people out. Fans, players.
Do you think PJ Fleck's getting worn out? Because, I mean, PJ Fleck's got a lot of these same traits.
Yeah, and frankly, Tim Miles does a little bit. He does. Like, yeah. just guys who talk a lot. Guys who, I think charisma is really good on the ascent.
Yeah.
I think once you get to where you're going, charisma and.
You better win a lot.
Is not all it's cracked up to be. I think less communication is more, and less energy sometimes is more. I just wonder if he's going to kind of eventually prompt eye rolls, you know?
Right.
When you tell your players, these are the four keys to winning, and, you know, I just think, I know in the NFL that doesn't play well. And I think after 6 years in college at one program, I just wonder if it has a shelf life. But first things first, you got to turn it around, right?
Like, and he's a good candidate. He's a great candidate to do that.
Right. Like, fight the problem in front of you first. And that's turn the thing around. I think, you know, Tom, you wrote this, and I agree wholeheartedly that Fickell's the best guy for Wisconsin. Rule's the best guy for Nebraska. And I don't think I appreciated that last time we talked a week ago, you know, in this same room.
I think that'd be fair to say.
And frankly, I think the fan base would have said Fickell a week ago too. And they did. You put it out in a Twitter poll, and it was overwhelmingly Luke Fickell was the number one choice.
Yeah.
But knowing what we know now, Rule's the best guy for Nebraska. Rule's the best guy for the situation. 5 years from now, it might be different, and Nebraska might have to find another solution. But for the problem in front of them right now, they got the best guy.
What's the problem in front of them?
Sam, they got to start from freaking scratch.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, very close to it.
This thing is decimated.
I expect spring practice to be a...
it'll be a bloodbath.
I was going to say bloodbath. It's going to be a lot of sore bodies. And that's good. That's what you want. I mean, that's... And so it's, yeah, they've got to learn how to block and tackle. And I'm really anxiously awaiting the offensive line coach. I want to, and I think strength and conditioning, I'm the last guy to talk about strength and conditioning. But it was clear that a lot of people were not in good shape for Nebraska. And yeah, so I don't know what they're doing there. I'm the last person. But I can see with my eyes.
They will let go quickly. Let's just put it that way.
I can
including see. The nutrition guy.
I mean, we could all see that. Yeah. So I'm anxious to see that goes hand in hand with the offensive line play.
Here's my question, because it's really easy, and again, this reminds me of Tim Miles in a lot of ways. It's really easy to tell yourself, hey, man, it's a 4 or 5 year thing. It's going to We got to scrap this thing down and start from scratch. But with the portal and NIL, how disciplined will they be, or how much does that plan change when there's 500 potential players sitting there next week and you can bring in a bunch of mercenaries? Like, well, Sam, you have a better feel for this than I do, but like, is it wise for Rule to say, no thanks, we're going to do it slow with developmental guys and 18 and 19 year olds and, you know, all that? Or does Nebraska say, you know what, we have to start from scratch, but we're going to do it with guys with Division I experience, you know, 2 or 3 years of college experience that may only have 1 or 2 years to give us? Like, how do they walk this line between starting from scratch, going back to the foundation and fundamentals and all those things that Nebraska has to do, while also occupying a transfer portal world where you're almost stupid to sit out entirely, right? Yeah.
You can't afford to sit out. We see what happens.
But you're not a developmental program if you're bringing in guys who are juniors and seniors either.
You can do both. But the first thing has to be done is to lay the foundation. Who are you? How do you play football? What are you all about? Lay that down, and then you go out and pick guys who fit into that system. You don't – like, I feel like last year Frost needed a lot of people. It was kind of a scattershot.
Well, Casey Thompson and Trey Palmer aren't there. They're 1-11.
And we'll see if they – I mean, Nebraska didn't have any culture. They didn't know what kind of – anybody, come on in. And some guys played, and some of the defensive linemen didn't do anything. So, I mean, Casey Thompson and Trey Palmer were great. But I feel like Mickey helped set a lot of that too. But I think it can be done. You know, you don't see the top programs are, but I mean, a lot of the Bamas and those guys don't take a lot of these transfer guys. It takes some.
No, they don't take virtually any.
They just, but when they do, it's kind of a cherry pick deal.
Yeah.
Now what you're talking about, Dirk, is the first couple of years you got to get started. You got to get players. You got to be able to try to win some games. Mm-hmm. How do you balance that with developing? And that's going to be interesting because these guys, the staff, have never had to do it. So, but again, if you have a guide, if you know what you want to be, this is who we are, then you can kind of get the guys who fit that, right?
Let me ask it. I'll just flat out ask it. How many transfers do they bring in?
10. 10 to 12. That'd be my guess. They don't have to bring in a kicker or a punter. And last year they did. So they don't have to bring in those guys. Those guys are here.
Theoretically, they could bring in 30 if they wanted to?
25? Yeah, I don't think they'll bring in that many.
But I'm just saying,
yeah,
like,
they could bring in 30.
It's a huge spectrum of possibility based on the roster upheaval. And
I think you're gonna want to hold off on certain positions. I don't know. Maybe it'd be more than 12. I think it'll be around. It could be 15, but I don't anticipate it being.
Keegan Johnson's in the portal.
Yeah,
well, I want to see who stays.
Of course,
and
he should be.
I'm just saying,
I'd get out of that program too.
I'm just saying, like, it's tempting to be a developmental program until you start seeing guys come across the portal that you're like, ooh.
Well, there's nothing wrong with taking a guy that's been developed by Iowa. I mean, not that Iowa had great receivers, but like, there's nothing wrong with taking transfer players who you feel like are going to come in and make a difference.
That's true.
Casey Thompson, as an example, the one thing that, you know, I mean, Casey had his imperfections. But one thing that's true about Casey is Casey's a worker. So you don't have to come, like, you can bring a Casey Thompson-type person into your program
That's true. But you're not developing the next quarterback if you're going out and getting Casey Thompson.
Now, that quarterback position is unique, and you know.
I'm just saying that's a good example of the type of decision that Rule is going to have to make.
I would believe in developing your lines, developing some of your linebackers, and being very comfortable with if I can go get Charlie Jones in the portal, I'm going to go get Charlie Jones instead of worrying about developing a true freshman receiver.
Agree.
So I think there's certain positions where if you feel like you can go get a player, you go get him. I think receiver is one. I think running back is another. I think quarterback can be and certainly should be if you don't have the guy in your program. I think cornerback can be one. And what I'll say about the linemen, and I've followed the portal stuff really closely, and we'll be doing a ton of it over the next 2 months. If there's an elite lineman in the portal, he gets about 30 offers in a minute. Nebraska's after this kid who's an offensive tackle from Rhode Island. Rhode Island. He's a two-time All-CAA player from Rhode Island who has 20 offers. That's how hard it is to find and develop linemen. They're like gold. So it's really hard to get these guys. The linemen are the hardest things to get. And if you get a lineman, A, you had to probably pay him some money in NIL, and B, he's probably not that good.
Matt Rule's not hired to go out and get a bunch of transfers. He was hired to develop football players. So I think it's fairly
simple. You just need a blend of both.
I mean, this is what, right, but especially early on, you have to supplement yourself because there are going to be holes. but as this goes forward, there will be fewer and fewer transfers, I believe.
You would hope. You would hope.
Well, yeah, you hope.
You would hope that what you're able to do over time is you're able to develop a program that's built on the lines, and you recruit the right guys, you put weight on them, you develop them as tough-nosed players, and then you don't have to transfer portal those two positions. My sense is that any team that's just about worth its salt, with the exception of Alabama and Ohio State, which can recruit five stars perpetually, is always adding in the portal. Because you can always use another receiver, you can always use another quarterback, you can always use a running back, you can always use a corner. That's what I would ideally like to see Nebraska do. The other thing I would say is, okay, so if you're talking about development, is then you think that they should sign more freshmen. Because right now they got 15.
Well,
and
I don't
technically 14, because Malachi Coleman just decommitted. So what you think is they should sign 25 to 30. Right away.
Well, the problem. Yeah. Go ahead, Tom. You can answer for yourself. The problem is you haven't been recruiting guys, so you're taking chances essentially.
Bet your butt.
The first year, look, he's got to put a football team on the field next year. So there are going to be some transfers. What I'm saying is that's not why he was hired.
Agreed. So do you sign 25 to 30 young guys?
Signing dates in 2 weeks. So I don't know what he's.
That's
I don't
right.
Know what
so you add 10
do.
Guys in 2 weeks.
I don't know. That might be too much to ask.
There's guys you can add. Frost did it.
I mean.
And then there's a second signing day. And
yeah,
Frost,
I think.
His
yeah.
first year, Frost added like 8 guys for the
I
second
think, yeah,
day.
I think you signed a bunch of high school. Okay. But let's not be. Well, let's be real here. Those kids leave early, too. So just because the problem with development is kids don't want to be developed. They want to leave. They want to play.
Right.
So he's going to have to figure that out.
So let's just go historical context. And we can talk about this again next week because we will be able to, or the weeks after. In 2008, when Bo got here, 2007, I'm sorry, 2007, there was no early signing date. It was in February. It was the day after my daughter was born, actually. So I remember this very well. I was sitting in a hospital room. I was looking at the signing day for Nebraska football in 2008.
Naturally.
How many guys did Nebraska sign that day? I think 32.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Huge class.
High 20s.
Timmy Marlowe class. Right? It was the class where they got Mason Wald.
It was the West Point kid.
Right. They added a bunch of kids. Yeah, Crackmeyer, all that. Yeah. That was a Tom Osborne offer. So they had a huge class. A lot of those guys left, but a lot of those guys formed the backbone of the 2012 Big Ten West title team.
They did.
Too.
Yep.
2000. So Bo leaves. 2015. Riley's more modest, but he adds a bunch of guys at the end. Tyron Ferguson, Matt Snyder, remember him. No quarterback, all that. But, you know, about half those guys left. Frost's initial class, not good. Not good. Adrian Martinez was a great pickup. Maurice Washington was not. I contend that Maurice Washington was worth way more trouble than he was success. They took a chance on Maurice Washington, and I talked to multiple Nebraska assistants who are no longer with the program when Frost got fired. And they said the biggest mistake we made was taking guys in the very first two classes that did not fit our culture, and we thought we had to get better right away, and we took some flyers on some guys who didn't fit who we were. And all I'm saying
is, all of that is really interesting, and all of that...
You got to be judicious.
All of that leads you to say, Matt Rule, don't take guys unless you're absolutely sure about them. But the reality is, in the portal era, that means you're passing on a whole lot of talent that you could grab.
That's right.
And I think that's the hard part of this.
I'm pro portal.
What do you do What do you do in the next month?
I think Nebraska needs to be a portal program. I've said that. I said that before. I said that 2 years ago.
But you can't do it without sacrificing some things developmentally.
You do. That's right. I think Nebraska needs to be a portal program. I think they need to take 10 to 12 guys every year and just not on the lines, but on the skill spots. And you just tell me. You tell me. Would you rather, you know, hope that a receiver pans out in 3 years, or would you rather just go get a guy and pay for him?
Yep.
To me, I'd rather just go get a guy that has 48, you know, 84 career catches.
No, Sam, Samari Toure and Trey Palmer.
Yeah.
Like, that's great. Go get that guy every year.
That's what I think. They just offered a kid from Idaho State. He's a good player. Get it. Now, the flip side of the coin is Isaiah Garcia-Castaneda leaves 5 games into the season. So, you know, like, it doesn't always work.
Yeah, the hard part is intangibly, what does that cost you? Because
it costs you a little bit.
You're losing leadership. You're losing continuity. You know, the young receiver on the roster who thinks he's going to play and all of a sudden he doesn't because you went and got a transfer. Like, that has an internal intangible cost to your program.
We should have asked Rule that question. We should have said, you know, if you had to choose between two, lean more one way or the other, are you leaning more high school kids or portal? And we'll find out, but
actions speak louder than words.
They do.
Well, he doesn't know about the portal yet. He will.
Oh, don't you think he'll be really good at that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we don't know. He hasn't done it.
Do you think Nebraska has as much NIL money as everybody believes they do? My God. Every time I listen to a national radio show or national podcast, it's like, you know, Nebraska's going to spend all this money. I don't know, man. Like, we'll see. Maybe now, 5 years from now, you don't have to get burned too many times before the boosters start giving second thought to that.
They were all standing in the back. I mean, the two major collectives were there.
I know, but...
And the boosters who pay the collectives were there.
I understand that, but like...
I just know that they, last fall for Frost, they sold out 2 or 3 of these groups that was like 5,000 a head.
Yeah.
But that was the first time. Like, you need ROI.
Yeah, but people always, if you have money, people always believe, they always want the new shiny toy. They want to get that new receiver. That, I think they're, I'm not saying that it's a endless well of money, bottomless pit, but it's kind of like that.
We'll see. I'm just not convinced that Nebraska is going to be a top 5 national leader in NIL, you know.
Yeah, I think
10 years from now.
I think the market has been set by USC. I think USC clearly is out in front financially.
I think they'll be top 10 because people want it.
Well, I didn't
say it's the only thing going on here that people will get into.
I think it could be top 10 without being
money
USC.
Everywhere.
Yeah. But like, USC clearly, I think, is way out in front.
Which is so funny because people worry about how much the coach is making. They're going to throw all this hundreds of thousands of dollars on players.
Yeah. Well, the quarterback at USC is making $10 million.
Are you being frugal or not? Is Nebraska frugal or not? They're both.
Well,
we don't want the coach making too much, but we're going to pay that quarterback what we have to.
I'm not some sort of spendthrift. I remember writing after the 2011 Citrus Bowl, or whatever they called it back then. Before it,
it's
after
like
it.
Tangerine Bowl. Come
is
on.
That the one? That
Tangerine Bowl.
So Tom Osborne, so I wrote this column like, Nebraska doesn't pay his assistant coaches enough money. And they need to come up with, you remember that Herman Cain was running for president?
The 333.
Yeah, you remember it. So Herman Cain had the 999 plan. I don't even know what that plan represented. But I heard it, and I was like, Nebraska needs to employ a 333 plan. They need to pay Bo $3 million, the assistants $3 million. And back then, they didn't make anywhere near this. And then a $3 million buyout for Bo. And I remember writing that and saying Nebraska didn't spend enough money. And Coach Osborne, he was at that. He had just come from some fishing trip somewhere in Florida. And he was there with his sunglasses. And he pulled me aside. And he's like, you know, did you write that? You know, we're pretty competitive. And I was like, I'm being lectured by a legend here. And, you know, nothing's quite like an Osborne lecture. Because you feel like you come out of it thinking, was I just lectured? I believe I was.
Well, it's
but
like,
I wrote that at that time, so I'm not.
I'm
some
not
sort
mad,
of like
Sam.
Person.
I'm just disappointed.
That's basically what
it's like getting yelled at by the Ward Cleaver.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, come into the den. Now, Beaver, I'm really disappointed in you. You know, it's kind of like that. But
so I'm not some sort of cheapo. I just feel like Rule's making a lot of money. Like, kids, this is a big time contract.
Yeah, it is.
He's one of the top highest paid coaches in the top 10 in the country.
I think Nebraskans want to believe that money. They aren't about money, but they're the program is. That's not how we do things here. It's about hard work. But then they love to spend that money on Nebraska football, whether it's travel or now the new cottage industry is giving quarterbacks $500,000 or whatever he's making. So and that blows my mind. By the way, I'm not saying Casey makes that, but I've heard a lot of money.
Oh, I think he makes quite a bit.
And yeah. So,
do you think he was worth it?
Well,
relatively speaking,
nobody's worth it in a 4-8 season.
I mean,
I think he kept him from 1-11.
You're worth what they'll pay you.
I guess it was worth it. I'm just kidding.
I don't know, but it'll take that much to get him to stay, and he might be worth it to stay.
I think he'll get it if he wants to stay. Let me go through some nuts and bolts stuff, and then we'll ask one more question about Rule, then we'll move on to the other sports. Nuts and bolts wise. Okay, so today is December 1st. The Nebraska coaches can go on the road kind of tomorrow. Nebraska announced 5 of its assistants today and their strength coach, which they needed to get in place very quickly, and they did. They announced 5 of their assistants today. I think the status of Mickey Joseph is now known, and we're not going to linger on this, and that's not the most important thing here. As it relates to Joseph, obviously that's a very sad and difficult situation and fluid, and we'll move on from it. I think all I can say is I think that, you know, he's not going to be on Nebraska's next staff, and we'll track and report what happens after his arrest. So they have 5 of their assistants. They're going to get another. They have the strength coach. They need to hire 5 more assistants, including a defensive coordinator. I feel pretty good about who the defensive coordinator is probably going to be. It's either going to be Jeff Collins or it's going to be this Phil Snow guy that's always worked with Rule. And Snow's pretty good. He's legit. He's a legit good defensive coordinator. He was good at Baylor. He's been good at Carolina. Can't really argue with his work. So if it's him, that's good. Jeff Collins has also been pretty good, too. The first official visit weekend they can really have is next weekend. Nebraska is trying to put together a sort of official come and meet Coach Rule if you're committed to Nebraska weekend. They can do this. So there'll be a new many of the commits will come back. Not all of them, but a lot of them will come back and visit Nebraska again and reacquaint themselves. I'm sure Nebraska will reacquaint themselves with them. They don't know any of these kids. I could see some of the receivers walking away. Malachi Coleman decommitted today. I wouldn't be surprised if Omarion Miller decommitted. He was tied to Mickey. So, we'll see what happens there. Then signing day is right before Christmas. It's like 4 or 5 days before Christmas. Nebraska could sign, in theory, you can sign just about as many as you want anymore, so long as you got the space. But I don't think they'll sign a ton. I think they'll sign maybe 20, but then they could sign another 10 in February. The transfer portal opens on Monday. Despite what you're seeing on Twitter, the transfer portal is not open yet, but these kids are going on Twitter saying they intend to enter the transfer portal, and the portal will open on Monday, and we will know all of the Nebraska guys who are going to leave. Not all of them, but some of them. Then there's an opportunity to declare for the NFL draft. Now, Caleb Tanner declared for the NFL draft today, but he didn't have any eligibility left, so there wasn't anything else he could do. So he doesn't exactly count.
Sam, I would like to point out that I I'm declaring right now for the NFL draft.
There you go. You could do it.
Yep.
In theory. Anyway, there'll be other guys that potentially declare for the NFL draft. O'Shawn Mathis may. Garrett Nelson has a decision to make because Garrett Nelson had a much better football season than O'Shawn Mathis did. And so you'll see the transfer portal. That's on Monday. Release the hounds, so to speak, on Monday. And then the official visit is next weekend, and then there'll be another official visit weekend. And by then, Rule should have his entire staff. So there's a lot to do over the next 10 to 14 days. I don't know that we're going to talk to Coach Rule a lot between now and then.
Sam, let me point out, a big advantage on this, and I think this is somewhat common sense, but Nebraska's never been in this position, so I think it's worth pointing out. Rule having as much time as he did to think about this and to plan, I think is a real advantage. because so many times, you know, Riley's situation, Frost's situation, they were just basically bringing everybody. They were just trying to transport what they had at the previous place and move it here.
Sure.
And, you know, Bo was hectically trying to win a national championship at LSU and compile a staff here. And, like, Rule actually has time and has had time to think about this. Yeah. How he wants to do it, who he wants to do it with, what's going to work, what's not going to work. I mean, we see him walking the beach at Cape May and think that, you know, you might think that he's partying or whatever, but I think it was a real advantage that he had that time, and I think you'll likely see the benefits of that here in the next three or four really critical weeks.
Do you guys know any of the guys on his staff, and do you have any initial impressions?
I don't, but... I've been hearing from people. It's great to have skeptics. A lot of Husker fans are mad because he's bringing the buddies. He's bringing all his buddies. Well, see, when you have buddies, it wasn't a bad thing to have buddies when it was Tom Osborne, and he had the same buddies for 25 years.
Yeah.
But see, Scott Frost bought his buddies, and they didn't work out.
Well, so some of them weren't good enough.
People are really far obsessed with bringing buddies. So yeah. I said, you know what? If the buddies won at Temple and Baylor, then I think these are probably good buddies. if you know, it's okay to have some of those, but for him to come in and expect him to hire a bunch of guys he doesn't know, no, that's not how this thing works. Luke Fickell is bringing his whole staff from Cincinnati to Wisconsin. Will that work? I don't know. They weren't Power Five for Cincinnati. We'll see how they go against all these Big Ten coaches who can all coach. So they're all like Fickell. I mean, he's technically like everybody else.
Right.
They all can coach. So we'll see.
Do you give a bonus for anybody who's been in the NFL? I do. I think to coach in the NFL is a hard thing.
I agree. I think it's just. I feel like these guys learned a lot together in the NFL, and I think there's going to be like a second wind to this thing.
I just don't view Temple and the NFL the same. Like if a guy had just coached at Temple and he was coming here, I'd be right. But when a guy's coached at Temple and Baylor and the NFL, even if you didn't have success in the NFL, that to me is a pretty good resume. Just my opinion.
Do I think it'd be good to have a Big Ten type person on this thing? Yeah. But I don't know enough about the coaches to know where they've been. People don't like the offensive coordinator, but no offensive coordinator in history of college football has ever been liked.
Yeah.
They've all hated everybody. Tom Osborne people ripped him. I ripped him for his play calling. Nobody's ever been happy with an offensive coordinator, so I'm not worried about that guy. But offensive line is a big one for me. And I got to say, not knowing anything about him, but I like the guy named Pot Roast. So
he's the defensive line.
I don't know how good he is, but anybody named Pot Roast is okay with me.
Sam, I want to.
That's good.
Just make a point about a pet peeve of mine, and again, this goes back to national commentary, which I think tends to be. I really enjoy until they start talking about Nebraska, and I think it's a good lesson about, you know. When you listen to national commentators, to judge their credibility, you need to listen to them talk about the program that you know closest.
Right.
Okay. When I hear people talk about Nebraska, the thing that always comes up is they don't have the players. Where are they going to get the players? The recruiting footprint isn't there. Geographically, they're challenged. Yada, yada, yada. They left the Big 12 and they no longer had access to players. Nebraska sucks because their coaches have sucked. Okay? It's not because they couldn't get players.
Okay.
For a long time now, enough with this no recruiting territory. They got to get back into Texas. When they left Texas, they had no chance to get players. No. They suck because their coaches have sucked. If Rule can coach offensive line play and defensive line play, Nebraska's going to be good again. I don't care if they're taking guys from Wymore, Nebraska. All right? Like, let's see if he can coach.
Well, their best defensive lineman, in my opinion, other than Garrett Nelson,
is from UTAM. If you can coach.
He was way better than the two transfers they brought in.
And I'm not denigrating everybody on Nebraska's staff. I'm just saying, generally speaking, Nebraska doesn't suck because they left the Big 12 and can no longer recruit Texas. Nebraska doesn't suck because there's no good players in Nebraska to recruit. Nebraska sucks because they couldn't coach the guys they had.
Okay.
Go through the recruiting rankings every year. Nebraska is always ahead of Wisconsin and Iowa and lots of schools in the Big Ten.
Right.
Not always, most of the time.
Right.
Nebraska didn't beat those schools. It wasn't because the talent wasn't good enough. It's because Nebraska never maximized their talent.
Okay,
so
fair enough.
I'm excited to see what a coach, theoretically, who is really good at developing players, what he can do in this program, because I think that was the primary culprit all along. It had nothing to do with Nebraska's lack of talent.
Woo! All right. Well, I generally agree with that. I won't use the word suck, but...
Nebraska has sucked. Can we just say Nebraska sucked? Let's call a spade
every,
a spade.
Every Big Ten, this is correct. Every Big Ten coach who ever talked about Nebraska, it was always a backhanded slap.
And they're really talented.
Yeah, they've got players. Everybody, every one of them have said that over the years.
That's right.
They got talent. What they're saying is they ain't got coaching.
It's fair. I mean, I think what I would say is that to nuance that,
and the personnel didn't match the scheme always, right. So like, you know, things didn't match up. Like there wasn't enough continuity, you know, all that. Like those all played a factor, but primarily it was coaching, it wasn't players. That was my point.
I think that's fair. I think that's part of it. I think constant change doesn't help. Although again, Scott Frost's staff was relatively stable for 4 years. He just didn't manage things very well. I think the constant change isn't helpful. I think there's a almost perpetual palace intrigue within the program that needs to stop. And I actually think, even as good of a talker as Matt Rhule is, and I think he is, and I think he'll give great interviews, I actually anticipate things getting a little buttoned down. I do. I think he's going to be advised, listen, this is a place where they're going to pick apart what you say, and they're going to pick apart what your assistants say. And you have to, if everybody's going to be on the same page in here, you got to be really smart about who you surround yourselves with. And so I think Rhule is probably going to be a little judicious initially and not necessarily talk a lot or necessarily bring every, you know, Joe and Willie ex-Husker into the program to talk to them about whatever. I think they're going to, you know, he needs to be judicious in my opinion. I think you have to be thoughtful about how you're going to process that.
Well, and Sam,
yeah, but the coaching hasn't been what it could be.
It's important to point out too that this is one of the benefits of having an athletic director who's literally watched this thing fall apart for 20 years,
right?
At close range,
right?
Like Trev has a lot of experience. He's also observed this thing, you know, from 50 miles up the road, and I imagine he has a lot of thoughts that A, he didn't feel like Scott Frost always listen to, and he probably brought in a head coach who is more going to listen to him. So I think Trev's imprint, as Tom pointed out, is going to be felt more and more on this program.
Okay, let's talk a little basketball and volleyball here for a second. We'll start with volleyball. Chances of them ganking the Final Four, 0 to 100.
Boy, last weekend really took a lot of momentum out of it. Kenzie Knuckles is a big, you know, just kind of spiritual force on that team, I think. And, like, you know, they just looked out of gas. And I think sometimes you get to the end of a season and it's just like that and you kind of need to reset. Maybe they can reset this weekend. Going on the road, I think, is not quite as daunting at Louisville as it would have been at Wisconsin or Texas. So I think I give them a chance based on the draw, but they're just not playing very well right now.
Mm.
They, if they get together and I think get the their top players, their the big dogs to show up and play at a high level, I think they can beat Louisville. They got a good draw there, so I think they can make the Final Four if they really play lights out.
Everybody here's hoping they will.
But after that, it's over. They're not going to beat Wisconsin or Texas.
They would matriculate to Wisconsin.
I mean, it would be interesting to see that in the setting of a sold out building with Husker fans.
Yeah.
But it'd be tough. So mm-hmm. I think Final Four, yes, if they play really well. But last year we kind of saw them they didn't win the Big Ten, then they show up and they go down to Austin and they win the regional. So with John Cook, I always sit back and I never say never. I always sit back and watch.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. They have the best coaching. I think now again, I'm way on the outside of the sport looking in. I just feel like the last couple of years, it's really up for grabs. That COVID has kept some players a couple extra years when maybe they wouldn't have already been there. So you see a lot of really good defensive teams, and I think Nebraska's got a chance. Not because I think Nebraska's playing spectacular, but because I think they can catch a lot of these teams. Because I think a lot of these teams are all kind of old. They all kind of know each other. I don't know that there's two or three giant stars in the sport. Texas has a player, but yeah. I think they got a chance. Simultaneously, I think they got a chance to lose in the Sweet 16 or even in the second round. I think this could be one of those years where you just see a lot of upsets. You see maybe some non-traditional teams moving forward. Certainly Creighton has that chance. Creighton hosts the first two rounds. If they can get through those first two rounds, they're going to go play Stanford. Stanford's not world beaters. Creighton's got a chance. You just never know. You never know what'll happen. Anything's possible. Louisville, by the way, has a tough second-round match against Purdue. That's not easy. Purdue's good. And so you just never quite know what's going to happen. I think it's going to be an unpredictable tournament. On to men's basketball. They're 5-3. They looked poor last week against Oklahoma, but they didn't have Derek Walker. They lost to Memphis in Walker's first game back. Then they beat Florida State. And then they beat a bad team last night. Boston College just stinks. But they beat them by 21, which is what you're supposed to do to bad teams. Now they get the hardest stretch that I can ever remember. Number 7, Creighton. Number 10, Indiana. They're going to be higher because they just beat North Carolina last night. And they spanked North Carolina from the beginning to the end. That was a 40-minute win. And then number 5, Purdue. And Purdue will probably go up. Creighton will probably have a loss by the time they play Nebraska. They're playing Texas tonight. I like Texas. But, I mean, my God. How do they even begin?
Well, okay.
To survive that.
It's just brutal. I mean, they couldn't move the Creighton game. The Creighton game is locked in when it's locked in. I mean, they're always going to play them in early December. But drawing Indiana and Purdue to open the Big Ten schedule, if that isn't the most Nebraska basketball bad luck thing I've ever seen, like, good God. So they
you
are
could have drew Michigan State, which is playing like trash.
They are
and Northwestern. No, you got the two best teams in the league.
They are a different basketball team with Derek Walker. There's no doubt. You can't watch them pre Walker, post Walker, and think that they're not dramatically different. But this is gonna be a serious test, and they've got to kind of just mentally survive it. I think they've got to, you know, they're gonna get a break after that Purdue game. They have a week off after that. Offensively, maybe they can keep shooting the way they shot last night. But I think the key is just to be competitive enough in these next three games where you don't lose heart. You know, they got to keep heart because there's a lot of winnable games after Christmas. But they've got to kind of have the morale to sustain this next 10-day stretch.
Can they hang with Creighton?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think Creighton is going to, you know. Here's the catch, and I think here's where it's hard to evaluate. If Creighton beats Texas, Creighton might have a little bit of a let up on Sunday.
I agree.
You know, I think for Nebraska's sake, Nebraska might almost prefer Creighton beat Texas.
You better believe it.
Because yeah. I think if Creighton loses in Austin, they come home and they want to make a statement about who they are. And if Creighton wins in Austin, I think maybe you can catch them, you know, patting themselves on the back a little bit. But no, I think Sunday is really tough. And then I think, you know, obviously going to Indiana.
I think they can hang with Indiana. I think they can play within 8 points of Indiana.
It's just, and I say this a lot about Nebraska, but they're just, if they had, if let's say they had Chucky Hepburn at point guard.
Yeah.
They'd be a real basketball team.
Yeah.
Like I'm not saying they go to the NCAA tournament, but they would be a real bona fide basketball team. They're just always one or two guys short.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I made a comment last week. You watch them play and you're like, oh, they're three best guys must be hurt. You know, they just kind of play like a team that's got missing their best three guys. Now, Derek Walker is one of those best three, but I don't think they have enough offense to compete against the best teams.
You know what's interesting is that they tend to get better as a game goes on. I mean, this has been true for like five games this year, where some of it I think is Sam Griesel needs to. He picks his spots so judiciously that he waits until about the 15-minute mark of the second half before he gets going, and I think sometimes you got to do it earlier than that. I do think they can play within three or four possessions of Indiana. I think Indiana's a very good team. Watch the whole game last night. They still don't have any height. I mean, Indiana's not tall, and they get out-rebounded, and so I think Nebraska can hang there. And then I think they're going to lose by 25 to Purdue because they can't handle that team. They can't handle their physicality. They can't handle their playmaking. They can't handle a 7'2" center. Doesn't matter if Blaze Keat is out there. So they're going to go 0-3. I think they're going to get in the hurt locker against Purdue. And I think they can maybe hang in there with Creighton and Indiana. If Creighton wins tonight, which I don't think they're going to do, no offense to Creighton, then I think you do. You're right. I think they catch them on a letdown. How does Creighton win tonight? I don't. That's the best defensive team in the country.
Tom, what do you think of all this?
Yeah, I think they do win tonight.
Really?
I think Texas has beaten one team, Zags. They haven't seen a team like Creighton yet, besides the Zags.
Yeah.
And I would put the Creighton as good as the Zags right now, certainly.
That's fair.
If they're hitting their shots, certainly. But they keep coming at you in waves. I think this is a game that they could win. But
they do.
Obviously, Chris Baird's defense is going to try to take some things away, too. Regardless of that,
they're the number one team in the country to win. In my book, they're number one in the country.
Nebraska's only chance to keep it close on Sunday is Creighton does not show up. They're going to show up. They love to win that game. Their crowd will be on fire.
Yeah.
The coach won't. They are, they're going to be there Sunday. So Nebraska right now needs leadership to get through the next week and say, okay, yeah, we're 0-3. But the hard part's over. Let's focus on after Christmas. I think the least the way I see this season is does the head coach get another shot next year? How does he earn that? I think there are a lot of games in January and February. You keep your head, you keep your wits about you. Don't give up.
Yeah.
Don't tank. Don't feel sorry for yourself. There's a lot of games that when I saw the team last night, they make their shots, the outside shots.
Yeah.
Have to go in, have to stay healthy. But I think they can win some of those, the Big Ten games. And I believe that's how he's going to be judged this year by not Purdue and Indiana, but the other teams along the way. Are you still losing to the Penn States and these in Northwestern at home? Or have you moved past that? Can you get in the top eight?
This is a topic for another day, but I think it's a really interesting discussion. And football absolutely has an impact on this question. How many questions or how many wins does he need this year to have a job 15, next year?
14, 15.
Well, we debated this a few weeks ago. Did we say 12 was going
to
be?
Well, no, that was how many he was going to win. Yeah. And I think 12 is about the right number for how many.
I think they need
how many
to get
going to
very
win.
Close to the NIT. You know, if not all,
I don't know.
But when you just pay a football coach what they paid him, I don't imagine that they want to fire a basketball coach this year. So
the best record I thought they would have after 12 games was 7-5. If they actually end up 6-6, that's not that bad.
You know what I haven't heard yet from an AD is anywhere is damn it, the COVID year counts. The COVID year sucked. It put us back. And so we're going to allow for that, and we're going to give a guy extra time because of that stupid year where everything went wrong. The team was on COVID for 3 weeks.
Everybody
it screwed everything up. Right. Everybody went through that. But it doesn't mean you can't allow for that to give him another year. I've never heard anybody say that. And I'm not saying I expect to hear it now. Probably won't. But you could say that.
So Bill Moose gave him an extra year on his contract after the
I don't know
year.
How bad, but I mean, give him another year to,
sure.
This is year four, right? So, but he's got to do something. But I don't know if Trev's in a hurry. It's basketball. I don't know that there's a lot of pressure to do it. And but you know what? He wants to win on everything. Yeah. And he wants – it's, you know, if it looks bad, if they have one of those years where they just – they, you know, run out of gas at the end, and they go to Indianapolis and lose that first game, and same old Nebraska. I could see it, but I think they have to show in January, February that okay. But so, what I'm saying is, in the next couple of weeks, not that crucial for him, I don't think.
Agree. We're going to know a hell of a lot more in 6 weeks, not in 2 weeks.
Like, can they beat Iowa at home? I mean, a good, great no. Iowa team, man. It's got Murray. But what do they got? You know,
we'll
so
see.
Those are the kind of games. K-State and Kansas City. K-State last night didn't look good, but they're not bad. And I saw Bruce Weber on the Big Ten Network. What a deal!
I know,
Brucey Weiner doing it right in front of the cameras.
He'd come and work at Nebraska, I'm sure. All right, well, that's our podcast for this week. We'll talk next week more about Matt Rhule and about Nebraska football and other things that are on our minds. By then, we'll know if Nebraska, I guess, beat Creighton or Indiana.
Did they get an offensive line coach?
Did they have an offensive line coach? All right, for Dirk and Tom, I'm Sam. Thanks for listening.